James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Grant that we may sit, one on your right and one on your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" They said to him, "We are able." And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you shall drink. And you shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized. But to sit on my right hand or on my left, this is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." Hearing this, the ten began to feel indignant with James and John. Calling them to himself, Jesus said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them? But it is not this way among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." Chuck Swindoll says this in his book, Improving Your Serve. It's not about tennis, by the way. Speaking of that, we had a great time, didn't we, Tuesday night? Some of us playing tennis. The original idea of becoming a servant seemed either wrong or weird to me. I realize now I rejected it because my concept of a servant was somewhere between a slave named Kunta Kinte, straight out of Roots, or thousands of migrant workers in the fields across America. Both represented ignorance, mistreatment, absence of human dignity, all things that Christianity opposes. The mental image in my head was a pathetic creature without will or purpose in life, much like a human mule who with a sigh shuffles and trudges down the long rows of life. "This idea disgusted me," he goes on to say. "And confusion was added to my disgust when I heard people linking the terms servant and leader. They seemed as opposite to me as light and dark. I distinctly remember thinking back then, 'Who, me, a servant? You gotta be kidding me.'" I think Chuck Swindoll's changed his view, by the way. But I think he's being very honest about his perception of a servant. I don't know what your view is, what your perception of the term servant is. I don't know what it brings to your mind today. I don't know what it brought to your mind years ago. But I am convinced that Chuck Swindoll's misunderstanding of servanthood is shared by many people today who see it as just total subordination. They see it as an underling. These are terms that are used to define it today. Low. Because there's confusion, I believe, and since I'm the one that decides what I'm going to preach to you about it. Because what I want to do is for you and for me to try to clear up some of the possible confusion. I am not convinced for one second that every single one of us who come here to Northwood have a clear, perfect understanding of this topic, authentic servanthood. So the best I can, guided, I hope, by the Spirit of God as He directs my life and my time of study, I want to try to help present a biblical view of authentic servanthood so that each of us may improve our serve. It's the title of his book, by the way, Improving Your Serve. In Mark chapter 10, as we read verses 35 through 45, we will examine in this passage some facts concerning true biblical servanthood. Once again, with the hope that all of us will clear up any confusion and have God's view on authentic servanthood and be servants of God. First of all, it doesn't come naturally. Verses 35 through 40, pretty obvious that it doesn't come naturally. At least it didn't for the disciples. And last time I checked, we're no better than they are. Preeminence, power, and prestige is the norm. I think that's the norm for the natural tendencies of our heart in our life. Preeminence, power, and prestige. Although the disciples were hanging around Jesus for quite a while, they didn't get it. You would think they would understand what true servanthood's all about. I mean, they're hanging around with the ultimate of servants. The one who wrote the book on it. The one who is the epitome of a servant. And they hung out with him and spent time with him, and they still didn't get it. James and John, and if you go to Matthew chapter 20, you'll see that Matthew portrays it as mama asking these questions for her boys. I mean, whose mama wouldn't want their boys, you know, to be elevated up? We're proud of our children, aren't we? So whoever, mom asking on behalf of them or them asking, I don't think it makes a whit of difference. Because they all were in this together. They were asking for James and John to be able to occupy, not throne number one, by the way. They did give that to Jesus, okay? But throne number two and number three. That's what they were asking for. They or their mom on their behalf, we want throne number two and throne number three for old James and John. And you say, well, that was just two of the guys. No, look at the other ten. You'll see down the line, they became indignant. They didn't like it. Why didn't they like it? They weren't going to give up those two spots of preeminence and power and prestige without a fight. We're not going to let you slip in and take it from us. So they all had that disease that I think is prevalent in the human heart today. And yes, prevalent way too often in the hearts of those of us who say we're children of God, followers of Christ. It seems that every one of them and people today generally, naturally want to enhance their image and want to get some glory. Diotrephes in 3 John, I believe verse 8. Just says this about him, and I hope none of us will have this on our epitaph. He loved to be first. Me. That's what it's about. This attitude could be summed up in a cartoon. I hope this is, there you go. I don't know if you can see, but I'm going to explain it to you a little bit just in case. They say a picture's worth a thousand words. But with this, maybe I can explain it and we can understand. See what they're bowing down to, what they're worshiping? I, me, my, myself, mine, myself, whatever it might be. It's more prevalent than we think. Like the commercials, have it your way. You deserve a break today. Oh, you owe it to yourself. In the bottom, the American cult. We talk about cults a lot today. It's a bigger cult that you're going to get. Worship of self. Wanting the preeminence. It's the natural tendency, folks. I'm sorry, I'll ramble just briefly because a lot of people watching sports nowadays, especially football. Basketball hadn't kicked in yet. Most people like me don't care if the NBA folds up and passes away. College basketball's not in March Madness yet. So we're watching pro football now that our favorite college teams are done. But it just gets me how the players. And last night we were commenting, some of us watching a little bit of a game. Guy, he's running down the field with an interception and a camera's on him the whole time. And then he gets up and has to go like this. He wants to make sure everybody saw him. I thought millions upon millions are watching him run downfield, and he still has to make sure they know it was him. You tell me anything else. That's not excitement, folks. Excitement's just getting up and, you know, doing that kind of stuff. That's bringing attention to self. When you do this kind of number, I'm sorry. I'll call it what it is, and I'm convinced that's what it is. Wanting to bring attention to self. It comes naturally. These disciples, and I believe a lot of people today, have a serious misconception about servanthood. You see that in verses 38 through 40. They have a serious misconception about servant. Jesus said to them, you do not know what you are asking. In other words, you asking about servanthood? You have no clue. That's what Jesus is saying. You're out of your minds, people. You want to suffer? You don't know what you're talking about. He's saying to the disciples and maybe to mom, you don't know what you're asking. You have no clue what you have to go through. It seemed only right, though, for charter members of the God movement. Remember, he talked a lot about a kingdom. What does a kingdom have? Kings. So it was normal for them to be part of the God movement, right there as disciples of Jesus, to have a throne. It don't seem only natural. Their lack of understanding is seen further in Jesus' reply. What he's talking about here, as he says in Matthew 10:25, a disciple must be like his master. Okay? So what he's saying to them here, you want to follow me? You want to be a servant? You're going to have to pay a price. You don't even have a clue of the great cost that you're going to pay to follow me. Because he said in verse 40, to sit on my right hand and on my left, this is not mine to give you, but is for those for whom it has been prepared. We see here in verse 40, the subjection, submission of Christ the Son, His loving subjection to the Father. The Father alone who dispenses this honor as He wills. So Jesus is saying, you don't have a clue. It's going to cost you a lot to follow me. And you want the glory, but you don't understand that's not the right path. General William Booth, founder of Salvation Army, I believe he understood the natural tendencies of man to be selfish and to desire the preeminence, desire authority and power and prestige. Therefore, when he gave his last sermon, he was in a sickbed. His very last sermon, I understand. He used only one word. others. Imagine that. Very powerful, though. Others. I believe he understood servanthood. Because servanthood is the path to greatness. You want to be great, you got to be a servant. You want to be great, you got to first of all be a servant. We see in verse 41 through 44. The ten began to feel indignant with James and John, calling them to himself. Jesus said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. But it is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all." There is the way of the world. That's what Jesus is talking about. Verses 41 and 2. The way of the world. High seat seeking is the way of the world. The world wants to get the highest seat possible. The greatest seat of honor possible. But Jesus says the great men in your world, in this world, are, yes, those who have the preeminence, those who have the power and exercise that authority and power over people. That's the system we have. I'll give you that. And the disciples were well aware of the social ranking in their day. And it seemed that they were striving for greatness and honor by the wrong means. Think about it in our government. We have a president. We have a cabinet. Folks, they have privileges that you and I as common everyday citizens do not have. In the military, you have officers, you have enlisted men, and you have all kind of ranks within those classifications. The great in our world system are those who exercise authority and power. They are the ones who get elevated. They are the ones who get honored. Jesus is making that very clear. It was that way in his time. It's still that way today. But what is he saying? Not so in the kingdom. The way of the kingdom he's talking about. He says, not so among you. Now, that's interesting. He said, not so among you. But it was among them. That's what I find to be kind of ironic or whatever you want to use there. Jesus, not so among you. What does he mean by this? Not supposed to be that way among you. Because you're part of the kingdom. You're followers of me. You're of another kingdom, not the kingdom of this world, but you are of the kingdom of God. And it's not so among the kingdom of God. The way of the kingdom, the great shall be your servant. In the kingdom, folks, we're all in the same class or the same rank. There are no classes, there are no ranks in the kingdom. There are different positions of leadership. I understand all that. But the way to the top, or the way to be first in the kingdom, is to become a servant. Remember Diotrephes I referred to in 3 John 8? He loved to be first. But in God's kingdom, we are to put aside our selfish ambition and our selfish pursuits. In humility, we are to be servants of all. I do believe that we in our society today, and it infiltrates the church, I believe, we get caught up in the celebrity syndrome without much of a servant mentality. We forget that in the kingdom, the way to the top is always down. I understand we have to have leaders. We're going to elect officers. There's a sheet right back there on the wall. Church doesn't function very well without leaders. I understand that. Government doesn't work very well, even with leaders sometimes. I'm sorry. He knows not what he's saying. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go back to the church. The church doesn't function very well without leaders. But in order for a church to function properly with leaders, every single leader, and it should be every single person, must be servant-hearted. Must have the heart of a servant. Martin Luther King Day tomorrow, right? Celebrate it tomorrow. It's a holiday. My wife is off. Regardless of what you might think about the man, he had some things right. I'm not a follower of everything about his lifestyle that I've read. I'm not a follower of everything about him. A little more liberal than I am. But he had some things right. Here's one thing he had right. And I planned this not even thinking about Martin Luther King Day, but my buddy Javon would be proud of me. I told him when I dropped him off at the airport, I'm going to refer to your buddy Martin Luther King on Sunday. And just wait, we're going to talk about JFK in a little bit. Wow. I haven't gone liberal in my political thinking, folks. But Martin Luther King Jr. back in 1968 was preaching a sermon. And he said this: everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to even make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You don't even have to know about Plato and Aristotle in order to serve. You only need heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. Now that'll preach. But because there's a lot of confusion up here, and sometimes a little confusion in here about what servanthood is, and it's not the natural tendency to say, I'm going to bow down low and serve. Not just to be great, but you will be great. And because of all that confusion and misconceptions, I'm convinced that it involves a new mindset. It involves a new mindset. Verse 45, highly recognized popular verse. For even the Son of Man, the God of the universe, he's saying, he, speaking to us, even I, God, the all-powerful God, the sovereign God, the ruler of everything, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many, he's saying. What does it mean? We should have, the mindset of a humble servant. That's the mindset he's talking about. It involves a new mindset, the mindset of Christ. We'll get to that. It is that of a humble servant. Christ, God, the one who had every right to authority, became the one who gave up everything in order to meet your needs and my needs. He laid down a clear example and the mark of how we are to function in the kingdom by serving. My kingdom, he says, is about serving, not being served. What can you do for me? The norms are different in God's kingdom than in the world's kingdom. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul uses the example of Christ, just preached through the book of Philippians. And if you enjoyed it half as much as I did, you enjoyed it. But I hope that not only did we enjoy it, but I hope that we learned. And one of the most beautiful passages in there is chapter 2, the example of Christ. Paul uses the example of Christ in Philippians 2, who as God humbled himself and took on the very form of a bondservant in order to go to the cross for us to become obedient to the point of death as a servant. God, mind you, the ruler of all, the all-powerful God, took on the form of a servant. You're going to hear me say it a few more times. Why? Because you don't get it and I don't get it. Repetition's the key to learning. And I hope we'll get it. Because Paul says in verses 3 and 4, have this attitude, Philippians 2, have this attitude in yourselves. Verse 5, which was also in Christ Jesus. And he goes back to verse 3. What is the attitude? Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Remember? Booth, Salvation Army, others. Do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but also for the interest of others. Consider the needs of others as more important than your own. That's not the way the world does it. You got to go to that monument again. I, me, mine, myself. That's what's usually in our mind. What is he saying? Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit. He's saying this, stop permitting those strong natural tendencies, what are they? Selfishness and conceit, to control you. Stop letting those control you. That's the natural thing to do. Replace those with humility of mind and regarding others around you as more important than your needs, their needs before your needs. What is he saying? It's a mentality that says, I care about those around me. I put their needs ahead of my own. I don't need to be served, but I need to serve as Jesus served. Leonard Bernstein, whatever your preference is, the great orchestra conductor was asked one time, what is the most difficult instrument to play in the entire orchestra? And he replied, second fiddle, with as much enthusiasm as first. Folks, that speaks volumes. That backs up exactly what I've been trying to say. The natural tendency is to have the first seat. Like it or not, in subtle ways, we push for the first seat. Sometimes even in our serving. Yeah. Roy and I were talking about this, and I don't think we're a whole lot worse than the rest of you. But even in our serving, sometimes we find out that we're really doing it, acting humbly, but the whole time hoping somebody will recognize. I'm sorry, I told this story before, but I have to tell it one more time because it's a gentleman came to this church and this 20-something years ago, and it's no one that you know, okay? I'm not even sure that even the three or four people who were, okay, Angie, Debbie, Bill, and Becky, okay, four people, and my wife, five, who were in the house back there, a youth house, that's where we were worshiping. We had a came along and we had a men's breakfast, and he had been wanting to try to convince me that he was God's gift to the Northwood family. Brand new to us, wasn't a member, hadn't made any commitments whatsoever, but he wanted to teach our adult class. And really tried to do a good sales job of how, and folks, I'll just tell you, he was tremendously unqualified to do so. But in his own mind, he thought he had a lot to offer. And he was 50-something years old probably at the time. I was 33, something like that. So he came along to try to, you know, convince this little young whippersnapper pastor. Probably he thought I had no clue what I was doing, and I didn't, but that's okay. I tried to keep that a secret. But I did know something. The way the leadership is to serve. And I convinced him of that. I thought I convinced him of that. But all it did was he had an idea to convince me now that he was a servant. Prepared a breakfast at our men's thing. Made a little program and put on the program. Served by one of God's most humble servants. Needless to say, he didn't last very long. You got to tell people you're a servant. You're not a servant. You're just serving in order to be recognized. How stupid. But we do it. In subtle ways we serve. I'm convinced that a servant, his biggest question he asks every waking moment, what can I give? What can I give? The heart of a true servant is always asking, what can I give? I warned you, I'm going to quote John F. Kennedy. You know the line, ask not what my country can do for me or your country can do for you, but what you and I can do for our country. Folks, it's gone down as one of the greatest sayings of all time. It's a good one. Because that's what it is in the kingdom. Jesus wasn't asking, what can you people do for me? Bow down and worship me. I'm the king. No, I'm the king. I'm the God of the universe. And I'm going to humbly serve you. We're going to see how he did that in some clear, concrete ways in the weeks ahead that we're not always willing to do. But most of all, he gave up his life. The mind of Christ, the kingdom way, folks, is to serve and not to be served. It's to give, not to receive. Rank, business, or nothing else should ever stand in the way of you and me serving others by giving of ourselves voluntarily to meet the needs of those around us. And by the way, there are a lot of needs out there. God has blessed us with opportunities to serve, individually and corporately. And the purpose of what I'm doing is to help us to recognize, first of all, that we need the right heart and mindset of a servant. Secondly, to recognize the needs around us and to serve where God gives us opportunity. We're going to talk more specifically about that in the weeks ahead. But you need to ask, where and how can I serve? Astronaut Colonel James B. Irwin, one of the guys that was in a crew that went to the moon and walked on the moon, upon returning with the crew after their successful moonwalk, he was humbled by the goodness of God. And later, as a Christian man, he shared these thoughts. As I was returning to Earth, I suddenly realized that I was a servant, not a celebrity. He went on to say, so I am here as God's servant on planet Earth to share what I have experienced so that others might know the glory of God. Do you understand what authentic servanthood is all about? We were talking about this week too, Roy and I, remembering, I don't know who you want to get, I know Swindoll says it, but there's a bunch of people that have said this. The true test of a servant is how he acts when he's treated like a servant. Can you say, as Jesus said, I am among you as one who serves? Do you wake up in the morning thinking about your needs? for others' needs. The risk of, I'm going to say it anyway. Considering the needs and serving others. Some of you know I'm a Georgia Bulldog fan. I haven't kept that totally secret. My wife is a Michigan State graduate. Yes, we were at the Outback Bowl, along with 10 others of our family, and mostly all family, a couple of friends. And I kind of think you know the outcome if you've been living in Tampa. I mean, it's in Ray J Stadium. Somehow those Michigan State Spartans squeaked it out and beat those mighty Bulldogs. We'll never understand. But my point is I have to tell you, I struggled a little bit. I was trying to be as sweet and as nice to my wife and my brother-in-law and sister-in-law. And my daughter and her husband, for some reason, were pulling for mama's team. But at least my two boys, they got bulldog blood in them, I think. So they growl like bulldogs even. But at the end of the game, you know, it took a little while. I confess. It took a little while. But watching the delight on her face, but her brother's face, my brother-in-law, who I love dearly. I wish everybody had a brother-in-law so wonderful. I have two of them. He was like a little kid. He was so excited that he's a graduate of Michigan State. And he had fun all the way back to North Carolina. He even ran into a Michigan State player in St. Augustine and had his picture taken with him. And that brought joy to my heart. I was happy for their happiness. It took me a little bit of time to get over the pain. But before we left the stadium, I was getting used to it. But I don't always think, and that's my point, how can I serve my wife? How can I serve my children? How can I serve Ron Miller? How can I serve Vanjie Hansen? Whoever's in the body at Northwood, how can I serve my neighbors who, for some I know, aren't part of the kingdom? How can I serve at the juvenile detention center, which is a ministry that God has put in our lap? Serving the fatherless. Hope you heard that last week. Do you know the natural tendency, as I said, I think you got it, I hope you did, is to serve me, to look after self, because after all, no one else is. But last time I checked, if you're considering my needs as more important than yours, and I'm considering your needs as more important than mine, we're going to be happy campers. Because we're going to do like Romans 12 says. We're going to try to outdo one another in showing honor to one another. Growth group, we talked about that. But since it doesn't come naturally, I believe it requires some help. And you know, it's just like God. He says, I want you to have a servant heart like mine. I want you to be a servant because the path to greatness is serving. Therefore, he says, I urge you, Romans 12:1, by the mercies of God to present your bodies, Paul says, as a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but, here it comes, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Your mind may need to be renewed today. Guess what? It may need to be renewed tomorrow morning. And every morning following. Every afternoon. Every evening following. Because the natural tendency is to elevate self. When God says you should serve others. Whose mind do you have? Whose mind do you have? Let's be authentic servants. as we allow the mind of Christ, our Savior, to live in us, deep down in our hearts, day to day. Let's stand and make this our commitment. And not just sing it, but let's make it our prayer.